これ、プロレス系でございます。So I hope you all managed to recover a bit since this morning, and I hope that we will have this exam graded by next Thursday. And I'll send out an email about the final. I believe we're in Hubble again, and I think it's on the 19th at 7:15 p.m. So, but 19th? 18th? All right, well, I'll have to double check. The news is crazy. We have time to make sure we're all on the same page with that one. Just in terms of where we're going, we're going to start in on waves right now, this class. We're going to do more with waves next class. We'll probably finish that up on Thursday. And then what I'm thinking of doing with the rest of that last class is to do some special relativities, which won't be covered on the final, but will probably be the coolest thing you're going to see all semester. So we're going to do it anyway. Because there's not enough time to do other stuff that might be important for you. I'm not going to do thermodynamics in 20 minutes or less than that. So any issues, questions? Okay, so last time we started in on we talked about simple harmonic motion. And when you think of simple harmonic motion, think of a spring. Basically, it's just something that goes back and forth in repetitive motion. And if you think of the force equation for a spring, F equals minus kx, and you put in the second derivative of the position with respect to time for acceleration, F equals ma, you can actually find that you get an equation of this form, where for a spring, this is k over m. But it turns out that an equation of this form is found in many, many different physical systems. And basically, anything where the force is restoring force and it is proportional to the distance that you are from the equilibrium position. And so it turns out to be very useful. So this is a differential equation, and there are solutions to this equation which can be of the form of a harmonic function, sine or cosine. And this is basically the form. If you want to prove it to yourself, you substitute in here and see that it satisfies the equation. So the form is A times the sine or cosine times an argument omega t plus phi. And this solution will work if omega squared, that is what we call the frequency, the square of the frequency is equal to this constant, whatever it happens to be for that physical system. So for a spring, that constant is k over m, and the frequency, square of the frequency for a spring is k over m. Okay. So to pull this apart, this is the amplitude, so that is a measure of how far the object goes away from the point of equilibrium in the center. That would be the amplitude. Omega represents the frequency. So in this harmonic function, if we don't worry about this, if we set this to zero for the moment, then a harmonic function here, remember, comes back to where it was when you go a full 2 pi, or an integer times 2 pi. So if omega is equal to 2 pi over the period with which this thing repeats, then as a function, general function of time, whenever you go one full period, you're dividing that out, you'll get an integer times 2 pi, and this harmonic function will repeat. So this omega is equal to 2 pi over the period of the motion, and this basically enforces the harmonic aspect of the system. Okay. And then at t equals 0, the spring starts somewhere. It could start at the equilibrium point, it could start out here, it could start out here, it's however you define it. And this constant just tells you the starting position. The sine of phi tells you what the position is at t equals 0. And so that's often called the initial phase angle. Angle because it's an argument of this function, but also because there's a relationship between harmonic motion and circular motion. that comes about if you think of a particle rotating in a circle with radius amplitude, radius of A. If it rotates with an omega, an angular rotation, and you look at the projection of this position on either the y or the x axes, you'll see that you actually, this projection gives you harmonic function. So if I start at phi equals 0, t equals 0, if I start at an angle equals 0, then this ball on the y just goes up and down and up and down and it executes some harmonic motion. Here, it goes over and back. So that's sort of another way to think about this omega. Yes?
In the previous slide, which is, I said, is that the same concept with the different?
Yeah, that's why I'm, yeah. This is that. And so if the spring is that, would be the spring constant over the mass, but for some other system, maybe something very different. So the essential piece, the thing that defines whether it's some harmonic motion or not, and is basically whether the restoring force is proportional to the distance. And if it is, you can think of it like a spring, but if it's a different physical system, you'll end up with a different constant here, which will give you a frequency, but it'll depend on whatever that physical system has. So if I look at the position as a function of time, it basically, if we're using sine, it will actually, the position x here will execute like a sine does as a function of time. So a way to think about that is there, as the simple harmonic motion happens as a function of time, you're at different displacement distances from the central position. So you can imagine having the spring go up and down, and you literally just spread pictures of it at different times all the way down the axis, and you literally will see something like that. Okay, so it's just nothing more than up and down. And you go through this one full cycle of motion. So if you start up here and you go down and you come back, then you've done that in a time of one period. You could start here, come back, and back to the same point. It is not, you start here, you go up, and you come back to that point. That's not the same motion, because in one case, you're going up. You start, you're going up, then you come back down, and now you're going back up, so the motion is identical. If you just go this one half, this distance, one case you're going up, the other case you're going down, that motion is not identical. Alright, so the period happens when the motion has gone through one full cycle. So, any questions about simple harmonic motion? Alright, so what I'd like to do is to move on to waves. And there's a tight relationship between simple harmonic motion and waves. So, for a wave, I mean, your basic intuition ought to be that, right? Just something where I make a disturbance and it travels, okay? And there's a deep relationship between that and simple harmonic motion if you consider that I do sort of a harmonic disturbance. So I can do this, right? And the wave will keep going in a sense. But if you think about it, look at this piece of the rope where the black tape is. It doesn't go, right? It doesn't move that way. It just executes this motion. Okay? So a wave is a pretty general thing. I can have a wave that looks like a harmonic function. I can have a wave that is nothing but an anharmonic pulse or whatever. Alright? It turns out there's an area of mathematical analysis called Fourier analysis where you can take any shape of wave, any pulse, and you can describe it as a series of different waves that are harmonic. Okay? So what that fundamentally means is we don't have to understand how to do just a pulse. Because all we need to really understand is a harmonic wave. Because if we really understand that, I can always get to the pulse by adding a big series of these harmonic waves, or letting some engineer do it or whatever. You're not going to be anything worried about it. But fundamentally, that's why, even though that's a wave, for the most part, we're just going to talk about harmonic functions. Okay? So let's think a little bit about what happens. Because every piece of this thing, which we call a medium, okay? We call it the wave medium, if you will. Every piece of it is actually not going like the wave. It's just going up and down. So what really causes the wave motion is you can imagine that initially I have some string and I pull my hand up like this. So now, as I pull up this part, it exerts a force on the part next to it and pulls it up, which exerts a part on the force piece next to it and pulls it up, which continues on. Way over here, the string is undisturbed because this disturbance, it's like there's inertia. Every element of mass in this medium, F equals ma. So I exert a force on it, but it takes it a moment before it actually begins to move. It can't convey a force to the next piece until it literally moves and the tension in the rope conveys that force to the next piece. This takes time. So then a minute later, I pull my hand down, and as I pull my hand down, this piece pulls the next, which pulls the next, which pulls the next, which pulls the next. But way over here, for example, that hasn't reached them yet. They're still moving up. And so you find this shape basically then propagates down the medium. So that's the basic idea. But if that disturbance is starting a simple harmonic motion, then each piece of the string does nothing more than go up and down. Okay? And so what actually makes the wave is sort of the time correlation in that up and down motion as you go across the medium. And that propagates with a certain velocity. If you think about what's happening with this string, I'm over here and I'm creating this pulse coming down. Think of a little element of mass in the string. When the pulse comes to it, it goes up, right? So the wave, in a sense, it is exerting work. I mean, it's doing work. It's taking this mass and it's lifting it up against the force of gravity. And then it comes back down. But there's an important statement there, which is, even though this wave is made up of a time correlation between different parts as it moves, it carries energy. And that energy propagates with the wave, literally. Because a little while ago, it was masses over there that were moving. The pulse comes here, and all of a sudden, this mass is here that are moving. And that energy can actually do things. Okay, if it's a wave, there's a vibration in the earth, it can destroy buildings. If it's a wave at the beach, it can move shells, right? If it's sound, it can bust an eardrum. Alright, so I have another example. Here I have a stiff wire that goes down the middle, and attached to that wire I have rods. Okay? Since the wire is stiff, if I twist it a little, it'll want to come back. Okay, so you can actually, this wire will cause simple harmonic motion of this thing, the individual rods going back and forth. But because it's stiff, If I twist it a little right here, it conveys that twist to the next part. So if I twist it a tiny bit, you see that it also conveys the twist down, right? So you good with that? So now, in the system, I'm going to execute simple harmonic motion, roughly, with this one piece right here. And waves. There's some weird effects that you get because of reflections of the waves, and we'll talk a lot about that in a minute. But you can sort of see. Now you might begin to notice some things here. I have long rods, and I have short rods. The cross section of the rods are the same. These being shorter means they have less mass, right? So this medium is such that I have more inertia in each little piece here, a larger mass, than I do here. Which means if I exert a certain force on this piece, it will move, but it will move fairly slowly because there's a lot of mass there. This will move faster, right? So now I'm going to make a wave pulse, and I want you to watch it as it progresses. And when it reaches this boundary, pay attention to how fast it's going here and how fast it's going here. Okay? What'd you see? It moves a lot faster, okay? So the wave speed depends on the medium. Okay, so now we will sometimes look at pulses, and we will sometimes look at harmonic things, but just remember that any pulse I can really create mathematically out of an infinite series of harmonic things, which we're not doing in this class, so don't worry about that. But that's why you won't, whenever you look at a wave thing, they won't really talk about pulses. But in real life, of course, lots of things come not so harmonic. Okay. All right, so let us sort of analyze a wave, okay? So what I'd like to do is to literally have a harmonic wave happening. So something like this, okay? And you note that the shape is moving. And so what I'd like to do initially is to just freeze time at some point after the wave is propagated. All right? So we have our string, if you wish. And the string, when not vibrating, is along this line, okay? And then I have a harmonic function or harmonic disturbance on this, and what you'll see is something like this, where I've frozen time. So this distance, this is position. You okay with that? So, in terms of terminology, we call this distance, usually it's given a symbol A, and it's the amplitude. And if you think about it, and you imagine taking a piece of tape and tying it to the rope, literally that piece of tape moves up and down with an amplitude, and if you were to able just to isolate that one piece, you would find it's executing simple harmonic motion with that amplitude. Okay. So that's called the amplitude. Note that as a function of position, if we've frozen time and we walk along the wave, okay, then you can see that this shape is repeated, okay? And it's repeated with a character. characteristic distance. And that distance we call the wavelength. Usually given the symbol lambda. Note that it doesn't matter where you start, but you have to be repetitive. So I could take this distance and that's also lambda. And it's the same lambda. So if you have a single harmonic thing driving this wave, that wavelength is the same wavelength all the way. It's characteristic of the wave. Okay? Very often in the discussion of this, especially when we get to something called interference of waves, we will talk about peaks and troughs. So if you're sitting on the string and this thing is coming at you, then we would consider this to be a peak and this to be a trough. All right, this sort of angle thing. Now what I'd like you to consider, although let me clean it up a little bit. Imagine now that we have this shape in space, because we froze time, and suddenly I allow time to start again. And what you'll see is that this thing moves, like so, right? So imagine the shape moving down the string. And then as the shape moves down the string, where this is still positioned, you'll see a place on the string. If you were to stop and just look at that, you'll see it executing simple harmonic motion, and it'll go through one full motion in the period, in what we call one period, okay? So you can imagine this maybe being, you have waves in the ocean and you have a cork. Just keep your eye on the cork, and by the time the cork goes through one full cycle of its motion, that you can think of as the period. And we strictly define something called the frequency to be equal to 1 over the period. And this is usually called F for music and strings and things, and often called nu for light. Now, if you think about it, this bit moves up and back down and back up in the time it takes this wave to travel one full wavelength. Or maybe it's easier to think about this spot. If we think about this spot, as this piece moves past that point, as it begins to move past, this point will move down, back up, and it gets back to here when this part of the wave has reached that point. You okay with that? So that means that in a time of one period, this wave has moved one full wavelength. So that's the velocity of the wave. And so that gives us a relationship that's very fundamental for the wave, which is that the velocity defined this as V. V is equal to lambda over T, or lambda F, or if it's another, if they're using nu for frequency, it'd be lambda nu. So this is a very important equation that we'll be using a lot of waves. So what I'd like to do is to describe sort of the equation for a wave. So an equation for a wave, what would I mean by that? What I'd really like to know is, if I have a point on a string, what is the displacement of that point on the string as a function of time? Okay? And if you can imagine, as a function of time and as a function of position, because I have two variables in this problem. This wave basically, what you see in the space that you have, it depends on where you are and at what time you are, because this shape moves, okay? And so in order to describe the wave, we want to look at this functional dependence both on space and time. And the way we set it up, it's a harmonic function, so I know that if I freeze time and I walk along the wave, as a function of where I am, I will see a harmonic function. And the displacement here will at most be amplitude A, okay? So what that means is that if I call this Y and this position, then it means Y as a function of the position is equal to the amplitude times a harmonic function, I'll choose sine, of something times x, and I'm going to put a kx in here because we like to overuse k. This is not a string constant k, it's a different k. This, in fact, we call the wave number. And since the wave is periodic in distance of lambda, then I want this function to come back to where it is every time I go a distance of one wavelength. And that I can do by having k be equal to 2 pi over wavelength. Because then every time I go a distance of an integral number of wavelengths, that distance divided by lambda gives you an integer times 2 pi brings the sine back to where it was. So k is equal to 2 pi over lambda. If I add time into this equation, this shape moves like so. Alright? So that means I need to add a time periodic piece. So if we imagine that I am at x equals 0, and I'm just riding the wave. So if we allow the wave to move, so here's x, and what I'd like to know, for example, is here's my wave, and let's say it's moving this way with some velocity, okay? As the wave moves, I ask, what happens at this point? What is y at that point, okay? So at x equals 0. And what we know is that it is periodic with a period big T. So I know that here, the y must go as the amplitude, again, because that point is periodic with the amplitude A, times some harmonic function. But now we have to add the time piece. So it goes as omega t, where this omega is 2 pi over the period. So again, 2 pi over the period enforces the periodicity, the harmonic periodicity, then time, which is equal to the big T period. So if I look at the position piece and the time piece separately, you sort of get these arguments, A sine kx or A sine omega t. But life isn't so easy because, of course, things are changing in position and time together. So we have to sort of group them together. So a way to think about that is to imagine what is happening as this shape moves, okay? Think of this shape and imagine it moving in on this x-coordinate as it goes, okay? We can ask about that motion. If you want to think about it, that would correspond to, if you took your eyes and you fixed it to a single point on this wave, say right here, okay? Then your eyes will see this moving, that piece moving with the wave velocity v. What characterizes that particular point is that the argument of the sine function, the phase of that sine, is fixed. Right? The angle of the phase of the sine is what determines where you are on this curve. And if you fix that number and you just freeze it, don't allow it to vary, then effectively you're sticking with that one point on the wave as it does its thing. It's harmonics. There may be other points that would look the same. You know, it's periodic. But if you were to stick at that one and see it go. So what I'd like to do is to imagine, let me just say, let's try to have the wave function y as a function of x and t to be equal to a times the sine of kx minus omega t. And what I'd like to do is to imagine now that we fix this and if we do that then we have if that's a constant, let me set it equal to 0. Alright, so let's just choose it where it's 0. Then kx is equal to omega t, and k is 2 pi over lambda times x. Omega t is... ...2 pi over the period. I'm not doing this right. Let me redo this. Sorry. So if we fix that and we ask what happens to it, let me take... So kx minus omega t is equal to a constant. The derivative of kx minus omega t I didn't think my way through this. Sorry, I thought my way through it, but I thought it through incorrectly. There's a nice way to do this that I think I'm not going to do quickly here.
So I'm not going to try. I'll probably justify it next class when I have time to sit and think and you're not all sitting here. This... form with the minus sign right here gives you a wave that moves to the right, and there's a nice way to make the argument, which I'm not coming up with right this minute. But basically, if you look at what happens when you fix the phase and look at the velocity, you find that point of fixed phase moves to the right when you have this form. And if I take the same thing and put in a plus sign instead, then it will give me a wave to the left. Or wave going to negative x. Okay? So that sign determines the direction of propagation of the wave. A determines the degree of which things move up and down as the wave passes by. And you have this as both a function of position and time, where K enforces the periodicity and position, and omega enforces the periodicity and time. Okay? So I believe that for most of us, our intuition is best governed by waves where the things are oscillating like so. But note that for this system, this thing is oscillating up and down while the wave itself is propagating this way. So this motion is transverse, we say, to the direction of propagation. It's perpendicular to the direction of propagation. So there are different types of waves, and if this is the amplitude, if the object is oscillating up and down, and the wave is moving this way, then we say that it's a transverse wave. But you can have different kinds of waves. You can also have a wave where the displacement is along the motion. So if the displacement is along the motion and you're moving this way, this would be called a longitudinal wave. So the classic example for a longitudinal wave that's easy to visualize is a slinky. So note that for a slinky, if I displace it, look at what you see. I don't even get it transverse. If I just displace this one little bit and I'll let it go, you see that you basically get this disturbance propagating in much the same way we have here, except now each bit of mass on this thing doesn't propagate transverse to the motion, but it's going back and forth. Okay? So the displacement goes back and forth. And the amplitude literally is, again, the degree to which it moves back and forth. And you can make it harmonic, just like you can with the other. So if I have it, again, it's harmonic with the piece going through one full cycle of its motion in a time period T. And if you were to freeze time and look at the shape, the distance between these pulses, okay? If I froze time and I looked at that distance, that full distance is one wavelength for this motion. Okay? So sound waves are like this. They're longitudinal vibrations of air molecules or molecules in substance. Okay? There is no sound in space because there is nothing to vibrate. So Star Trek's just full of shit, right? When the starship goes by, it's like, nah. And space battles would be incredibly boring if you made them realistic on the great screen in Star Wars, right? Because you'd have no sound whatsoever. So it would be not so cool. So thank God most people in Hollywood either know no physics whatsoever or pay no attention to what they know, and that's a good thing. So, all right, so transverse and longitudinal waves. So clearly on the string it's a transverse wave. So musical instruments are transverse waves, but what they'll do is you can relate the two, because you can imagine in a musical instrument, I have a string vibrating. As the string goes up, it literally hits air molecules and causes them to start vibrating with that same frequency. The air molecules are doing this, okay? So, if you think about what we see here, what you actually are viewing are, instead of a displacement of the string, in a sense, what you're measuring here that looks like a wave is a variation in sort of the string density, right? So a longitudinal wave in sound is a variation in the air density as it propagates, just like the slinky, except now you have air molecules. That, if you put more molecules in a small space, that's pressure, right? You're making a higher pressure. So you can think of sound waves as a wave in with a variation in pressure. So you often don't think of it really so much as a displacement of the molecules like that, but as a variation in the pressure as a function of time at a given point. When the string is vibrating, so if I have a musical instrument, like a guitar or a bass, and I pluck the string, and we're going to look at this very closely soon, I will cause the string to vibrate with a certain frequency, okay? As the string moves up, it will cause a high pressure area right here. And then as the string moves down, it will cause this to be a low pressure area. So I get a high pressure, low pressure. High pressure, low pressure. This pressure variation will happen with the same periodicity of this movement. Once I do that, this pressure variation will also propagate outward in all directions, okay, at the speed of sound, which is basically characterized by the degree to which I can move these molecules back and forth fast as it moves outward. Okay? So, what I'd like to do for the right now is toss out a derivation that I was going to do earlier, and I'm going to not do it, I think. So logically, what I'd like to do is to motivate for you the fact that if I have a very massive piece here, then the wave propagates fairly slowly, because as I exert a force on it, it takes it time to begin to react to it.
If I had a very light mass here, it moves much faster. So we already saw that with this demo, where I have heavy pieces and light pieces, and wave goes much faster here. If I have the force here very, very tight, then it turns out, I'm not going to derive it for you, that the wave will also move much faster. If it's fairly loose, it goes sort of slow. If I tighten it up, it goes much faster. Okay? So if we were to look at the velocity on a string, and it's derived in your book. I'm not going to waste your time with it now because past experience, I think, is not a particularly useful derivation to do for you guys. What you find is that the velocity for waves on the string goes as the square root of the tension in the string divided by the mass density of the string. Show you right here is the tension. If the tension is sort of loose, it moves slow. If I tighten it up, it goes much faster, all right, which is what you would expect for that kind of thing. I haven't proven to you that it goes to the square root. And, you know, if you're curious, I'm sure your book does the derivation. I just don't think it's really worth a while. So the velocity sort of contains two pieces. It contains a piece which characterizes the degree to which one particle talks to another, which in this case is sort of represented by the tension. And it represents, there's a piece that represents the degree of inertia you have, which is a measure of the force. Okay? So all waves will have that kind of stuff. And so it's not vidocity. If we were to consider sound waves, you have some speaker, and that speaker, if you've ever taken the cover off a big speaker and watched it, especially if you have a fairly big, heavy bass, because you do this with a bass thing. You do it when your roomie's out of the room, if they've got the speakers. They probably don't want to see you take the covers off the speakers or whatever. But play some heavy bass, and what you see is this thing doing this stuff, okay? It vibrates. So when you have this big black membrane that's vibrating like that, so what's it doing? Every time it pushes, it's creating a change in the pressure of the air at that point. So it's sort of like the string that we were just talking about, except for this big membrane. And then you have the sound propagating as that vibration propagates. So this thing is moving back and forth, and what you'll end up with are variations in the air pressure that head out, and I sort of made it linear, but of course it goes out in all directions. And this whole thing goes out at the speed of sound. And your ear is sort of the inverse of that. Your ear has the eardrum, which when you have high pressure hit it, it pushes it in, and then the low pressure comes and it sort of goes out, and that vibration then gets converted into signals that your brain can think of as sound. So what you need then is something that describes how easy it is to move the molecules back and forth, or compress the air, if you will, and you need something that represents the degree to which the mass elements within the object the sound is moving through can be manipulated. So the velocity in sound
is equal to the square root of b over rho, where b is something which we call the Bolt modulus. And that's really a constant that characterizes the compressibility of the gas. Okay? And then rho represents the density of the gas, which, if you think about it, is a measure of how much mass that you have to move in a little element of the air in order to have the wave propagate through it. So it's basically sort of the same thing, just in a different setting. Do you?
For the velocity, the equation of concentration of the intensity, is that even like a metal string, like the waves would slow on metal string versus like a plastic string?
Yeah, we're going to do a lot of that on Thursday. I'm going to have a setup where it's much easier to really talk about that. Or maybe you actually have time today, but it's exactly true. Okay, so if you look at a musical instrument, the whole idea with a musical instrument is you're vibrating this thing, and then it vibrates the air, and it sends a particular sound to the ear. Now, why a string of a certain length and tension or whatever vibrates with only one frequency is something we're going to get to. But given that it does, what that tells you is that actually, I want to not talk about that yet until we do a bit more, because it all gets tied together with the frequency, the tension, and the mass. But yes, it basically means for the same tension, if I put a string that has a different mass, the wave will travel with a different velocity and I'll get a different frequency. So the things that you vary when you have a musical instrument, if it's a stringed instrument, is you vary the tension of the string and the mass of the string. And you can then vary the length over which it's vibrating by putting your finger in different places. But how that factors in, I want to cover a little bit more. So we're going to get to the essence of musical instruments shortly. And it's absolutely cool. It's neat stuff. Okay. Any questions so far? Okay. So there are a couple of other characteristics of waves that I want to talk about, and then we're going to get into some really cool things that we do with waves, including music. So let's see. I want you to notice something here. This would be what we would call a boundary in the wave medium, because here I have the particles that have a certain characteristic, and here I have particles with a different characteristic. Okay? And I want you to notice something here. Watch what happens as the wave propagates right here. It's a little hard to see because it moves so fast when it's right there. I'll try to make it big. Did you notice, and I'll do it again, as this wave comes in like that, and it enters this part of the medium, the wave stays with the same orientation. Okay? You're going from a heavy medium, that is, these have a lot more inertia, to a light medium. And note, I want you to try to note, that as the wave propagates through this point, it keeps the same basic orientation. Okay? You good with that? Now watch what happens when I do it the other way. Now I'm going from small to heavy.
actually continues on, okay? But let's see if I can see it here. Okay. So that was the propagating wave. So it sort of keeps the same sense. If I go from heavy to light, what I'd like you to think of now is as this wave comes, one of the things that happens at all boundaries of different media is you'll get a transmitted wave and a reflected wave. So I want you to now watch this wave come in, and when it hits this point, you're going to see something begin to propagate backwards. And as it goes this way, I want you to think of the sense of it as it does this. So it's up, it's up, it's up, and now it propagates back. As it hits this point, note that it starts propagating back with the same sense. Okay? Now watch what happens when I go from light to heavy. When I go from light to heavy, when it hits this point, what propagates back starts to have the opposite sense. So you get this inversion of the shape of the wave at that boundary. Hard to see, but maybe you can see it. Okay?
So it propagates with the same wave.
Yeah, so let me. So imagine I have a similar thing, but let's think of ropes. I actually have normally this comes with a light rope connected to it, so I can actually do it on the rope as well, but I didn't get that this time. So I have a heavy rope, and let's say that it then connected to a small rope, okay? And what you'll find is as this wave propagates through, it keeps the same sense, okay? And that we would call the wave that propagates through, we would call the transmitted wave. And if I'm going from heavy to light, oh, that didn't work. Wave, the incoming wave looks like this, okay? When it hits the boundary, I'll have a transmitted wave like that, and then I'll have a reflected wave that comes back from the boundary. Okay? If I have the transmitted wave coming from the small medium, the light medium, and hit the heavy medium, as it goes across, the transmitted wave, in this case, has the same sense. But the reflected wave that's coming back, the reflected wave has the opposite sense. In other words, the sign of this displacement, as this comes up, it reverses for this trend, for this reflective wave. So a way to think about that is if we look at the reflected wave, so what does that mean? Sorry. If you think of a sine wave like that, if I flip it, it's equivalent. Oops.
Sorry. I'm trying to do something that's not working too well. Okay. Note that the blue wave and the pink wave, we would say, have the same phase. Okay, because they would have the same basic orientation. If I now flip the blue one, it's equivalent to changing the phase by 90 degrees. Okay? So what we say is that when you go from a heavy medium to a light medium, the transmitted wave keeps the same phase. The reflected wave keeps the same phase. When I go from a light medium to a heavy medium, the transmitted wave keeps the same phase, but there's I said 90 degrees. Sorry, there's a 180 degree phase change for the reflected wave. That is, it flips its sense as it propagates backwards. So the way to think about that is, if you're going from a medium that is fast, meaning the wave propagates fast, to slow, or from low mu, which is low linear mass density, so fast is, to high mu, then you get 180 degree phase change. If you go from slow, that is something that has a lot of inertia, to fast, or from high mu to low mu, then you get no phase change. Why I'm going through this will become apparent soon, but there's some very cool stuff that we need this for. Okay? So there's another interesting thing that happens with waves, which we call the principle of superposition. Experienced it before, but you may not have really thought about it this way. So imagine you're in a wave pool or at the ocean, and you have a wave coming at you this way, and you have another wave coming at you this way, and they are timed such that the crest of each wave hits you at the same time. What happens? That's when you go way high, right? I mean, you know it. If you have a wave coming this way, the crest, and you have another one coming with a trough, when they meet, it's pretty anticlimactic, right? They sort of disappear, okay? So this is an example of what we call superposition, which is, if you have multiple waves in the system, the displacements or the pressures or whatever it is they're vibrating just adds together. Okay? And this turns out to be an incredibly important characteristic for all types of waves. And it leads to things called interference and diffraction and all sorts of optical effects. It also leads to the phenomenon that we'll deal with music. So there's lots of neat things that come out of it. So what superposition means is that if I have on a string, I have two waves coming at, say, some time t1, and I look at it some time t1 later, as these two things hit each other, they add together. Actually, I undershot that. They add together, and then they just pass right through each other and carry on their merry way. And this would be something that we might call a constructive interference. in that when they add together, they literally build on each other because they have the same orientation in this way. You could have another example would be, suppose I have a pulse going in the string this way, and I have another pulse coming this way, but now they have the opposite sense. Then what you'll find at T2, this is T1, at T2, you might have nothing. And then a moment later, at T3, you'll have it looking like this. And you might say here you're exhibiting destructive interference. Because they literally act against each other. Yes. And they go back to exactly how they were as they go back through each other. Yeah. So it's really like these waves have an independent existence that you then can just sort of add together. And if you can then separate them out, they have that independent existence again in this kind of game. Yeah.
So when the waves add together, it's non-collision.
It's
not collision.
So when the waves add together, it's not a collision. Right. You don't really think of waves moving through each other as collisions. They superimpose. They sort of become the sum of them. Okay. And this is really important because it governs all the characteristics of sound and light, and there are lots of weird things that happen. Yeah.
So what if like one of them is like bigger than the other?
If one of them is bigger than the other, then, for example, the big one is coming along, hits the smaller one, you just get a small increase. You add them together at whatever their amplitudes are. Okay?
And then what is separating?
Yeah. Okay, so you get lots of strange effects with this. Huh? Yeah, so for constructive, they just sort of add together. Oh, well, they're both still moving through each other. It's just that that's the moment where they hit each other, if you will. Okay, so have you ever come in here and wondered why this room is so ugly? Who in hell picked this crap? Or a ceiling that looks like that? Why would you ever design it? Some auditoriums are a little better than others, but by and large, they share this thing. They will have really weird stuff on the ceilings and the walls. You ever wonder why? If you've ever been in a really badly designed auditorium, which you could be one that might be aesthetically more pleasing in some instances, it's one where you don't have these weird shapes around, and there's a reason why. You'll find that I'd known physically that it exists, but I had never really experienced it once until I was at a meeting at an auditorium in the chemistry department at Brookhaven National Lab, where I used to do an experiment. And I walked into this meeting, and I sat down in the seat, probably about, I don't know, that would have been about the distance, about 3/4 of the way back from this auditorium. And I'm sitting there, and one of my friends gets up there, who's leading off this meeting, and he starts talking. And I couldn't hear him. And I'm looking, and I couldn't hear him. I thought, my God, I've asked my hearing. And I get this big jolt of adrenaline. It scared the Jesus out of me. I guess the weirdest thing. It was just... And it was like dead silence. And I thought... And I was actually scared for a moment, and I thought, okay, I don't know why, so I moved closer. And so I got up, right? So I'm over here, I can't hear a thing. I got up, and I walked about this far, and I heard him perfectly. Then I walked about this far, and I couldn't hear anything. And then I walked, and what's happening was you've got the sound waves coming, okay? And let's suppose that you are an integral number of wavelengths from the person. So when the sound's hitting your ears, the pressure is high, for example, okay? Then suppose the sound waves go from there, bounce off the wall, and come into your ear, and now the pressure is a trough for that distance, okay? Now you've got a high pressure and a trough hitting your ears at the same time. You have this phenomenon called interference. They cancel each other out. And so you literally have a dead zone in the auditorium. Had he moved, it would have changed its pattern. So if you're a certain distance, for example, from two speakers, you may find you have a dead zone because literally the sound is canceling out. At the same time, you'll have regions where you'll have higher amplitude. That's really weird. That's one of the most dramatic examples I've ever experienced of this kind of phenomenon. So how do you solve that? Well, the way you solve it is you make the auditorium really ugly by putting lots of different shaped surfaces all over the place so that there's no big flat surface to give you this different distance. Really, you have lots of different reflective surfaces so that you're getting the sound coming to you with lots of different path lengths. And you're not going to have this interference phenomenon have sort of such a dramatic effect. And it basically, you know, it's that kind of thinking you have to do to make a really good auditorium. It's physics. You're trying to make sure that you have even sound intensity throughout the auditorium at all frequencies, if you can do it, right? Because this is now frequency dependent because and frequency of sound is what you hear as the different pitches, right? Different notes. So if I'm oscillating the air really fast, you hear it as a higher pitch. If I oscillate it slow, you hear it as a low pitch, okay? Those wavelengths are different, which means that interference phenomenon is also going to be frequency dependent. So a nice auditorium has a pretty even frequency distribution, a decent intensity distribution of the wave strength at your ears at all frequencies. In principle, if you can do it, then what you're getting when you're sitting out there is a representation of what's being created up on stage. Right? If you have any interest in music, I've got to say, what we're going to do Thursday is the coolest stuff of the semester. It's really neat to do stuff, so be sure.
I started playing guitar recently.
Oh, that's good. Just one second. I want to ask you that.